Well, Ken Klein will talk about visitors from outer space during our program as we talk about the Pillars of Enoch. But if you get up to the Digicam, which is up on the coasttocoastam.com website, right there at the top of the feature article, you'll see I had a few visitors into the studio today. Go take a look. We'll be back in a moment with our special guest tonight, Ken Klein, on Coast to Coast AM. Ken Klein's interest in film production and writing came later in his life after he was stumbling into the writings of ancient prophets and those from his own Jewish heritage. In the Old Testament, he takes on life's greatest mysteries, rips off the cover, exposes them through fascinating, riveting films and books. Now, in his new documentary film, The Pillar of Enoch, Lost Legend of the Great Pyramid, he reveals one of the greatest enigmas and mysteries of all time. He's our special guest tonight, Ken Klein. Hey, Ken, welcome back.
Oh, my. It's so good to be back with you, George. You know, I was listening to that music, Midnight Cowboy.
Yeah.
Boy, did that bring back memories. Back in the 60s, it was the favorite song, musical score of one of my dear friends, Don Simpson, who was a University of Oregon graduate and went on to become the head of Paramount Films and was my roommate when we lived in Sausalito together. And it just brings back all those memories. And it's a kind of a amazing tune that sparks a lot of thoughts in my mind.
That, you know, music does that to me too, Ken. It, you know, it either is funny, fun, emotional, whatever it is to us, it really does something. And, you know, I think it's so important in our lives to have this. I really do.
Absolutely.
Hey, you know, last April, and we'll talk about it a little bit later on in the program, I asked you a question that you were hesitant to answer. So we're going to corral you tonight, won't we?
Fair enough.
So what have you been up to since we last talked?
Well, my film was a big hit at the Cannes Film Festival.
Good
after
for
I was
you.
On with you in April. The festival was in October, and my new distribution company, Octopix, out of Toronto, is very excited about it, and they're selling licenses all over the world now for it. Hopefully at this NAPTE conference in Las Vegas next month, they'll sell maybe to the History Channel or something like that, maybe the Discovery Channel. We haven't landed any deals with that yet, but we're really excited about it. In fact, the Octopix people, Gary Gladman, who is president of Octopix, has kind of encouraged me to make two more films. So we're in the midst of finishing the second script of the two, and we plan on going back to Egypt in the end of next month to film. So we have another film on the Great Pyramid coming.
Excellent. You know, how did you get so interested in the Great Pyramid?
Well, you know, it really goes back into my history. I had an amazing experience. I think I might have mentioned it on the last time I was on with you, where I had this, I was heading, you know, I was a professional football player, and that's all I wanted to do was play football. But I had a dream the day before I left for my second stint in the NFL, and it was a dream where this woman was looking down at me, and she said, "You've been in the hospital for 10 days. And 4 months later, lo and behold, I was in the hospital. I had my shoulder ripped out of the socket, and this woman's looking down at me, and I'd come to know her. She became like a surrogate mom to me when I was with the Houston Oilers, and she said I had been in the hospital for 10 days. And I knew I had tapped into something that I wasn't prepared for, and that got me on the track of the paranormal or spiritual, whatever you want to. It was another dimension that I knew nothing about, and I've been questing ever since, but this whole thing about the Great Pyramid has come now after almost 35, 40 years of being on this track and studying ancient prophets. And I ran into two fellows. One guy wrote a book called The Great Pyramid, A Prophecy in Stone, and another guy from British Columbia, I'm not allowed to say his name, he just wants to be known as the Manifester, who introduced me to some things that were very far out of this world, and some of that stuff is now posted on my internet site where people can go read about it.
Now, but which one, though? Because we've got two sites here. For
well, you can go to either one, enochspillar.com, and Enoch is E-N-O-C-H-S-P-I-L-L-A-R.com. And the other one is kenkleinproductions.net, and it'll take you to the same place.
Okay.
And you can read this unbelievable stuff. I've never seen anything like this in my life, and I've been down the pike. I'm 60 now, and I've been down the pike and know a lot of people and done a lot of research in my life, but there's nothing, I've never seen anything like it. And he's come out now with seven books. The first, we have an excerpt of the first one that's now available. And the reason I didn't want to talk about the question you're going to ask me later is because the documentation for what you were asking me for hadn't yet been published. Now it is, And so I'm feel comfortable in sharing.
That will be a major story here on the program then, Ken, when
we talk about this. Very major.
Now, you know, we talk about the Great Pyramid, but you also call it the Pillar of Enoch.
Explain that. Well, you know, the Great Pyramid is truly, well, it's the last remaining wonder of the world. And there's a reason for that, and that's because it was built with such precision and with such mathematical genius that it has been able to endure all of time. And so even though the traditionalist and the Egyptologist and the provincial view of the Great Pyramid is that it's a tomb, as I studied it and as I read these writings of these other gentlemen and as I went to Egypt many times, it is not a tomb. It was built with supernatural knowledge that was handed down, we believe, to Enoch. Enoch, it was also written about by the great historian Josephus that talked about him being in the line of Seth, which was the seventh from Adam, and that even in the Bible, in the Old Testament, it says of him that Enoch was a righteous man and that he walked with God, and then he was taken. And so there's some very interesting things in that statement. First of all, where it says that Enoch walked with God, the word there for God is Elohim.
Right.
And Elohim is clearly defined as a plural of the word Eloah, which is where the Arabs get their name Allah from. Is from this word Eloah in the Old Testament, only mentioned once. So Elohim is explained in the 82nd Psalm as gods. So where it says Enoch walked with God, it should properly be rendered Enoch walked with gods. And gods are clearly spoken about in Moses talked to the burning bush. It says Elohim there. And later we find three places in the New Testament where Elohim is rendered as angels. So clearly in the Old Testament, Elohim, used all over the place, even in Genesis 1 where it says, let us make man in our image, is talking about angels there. So Enoch walked with angels, and we believe there's enough historical evidence and there's enough proof, and I'll share some more with you later on, that is so conclusive now that it's very clear that Enoch walked with angels, and it was angels that gave him the knowledge, architecturally speaking, to engineer the building of the Great Pyramid, and then he was taken. He never died. That's why the tomb inside, or the funerary box in the upper chamber there is empty, because there was no need to put him in there. He never died.
Now, when you say taken, you know, we've had a lot of people claim that they've been abducted here by extraterrestrials. Is that the same terminology here?
Well, I don't know how to answer for them, but I can tell you there's precedence in the Elijah was also taken in a fiery chariot, and chariots are mentioned in the Old Testament as the vehicles in which angels ride. So, you know, a lot of the Christian world believes that angels fly around with their wings, but they actually fly in ships. So we believe that Enoch was taken in a ship.
See, I'm a believer, Ken, in a divine creator. However, I'm beginning to think that a lot of references in the Bible, they might have been those witnesses who passed the stories on down, ages and ages. They may have witnessed extraterrestrial visitations, we'll get into that, and confused it for godlike or supernatural figures.
Well, you know, there's a lot of reporting about different types of, let's call them ET manifestations, okay?
Yes.
And the things that I read about it, and some of the things that are posted on the Internet where there's actual pictures of what they call these grays and all of that, these aren't the renderings that really are portrayed in the prophets and in the Old Testament as being angels. These are some different manifestations. Angels in the Bible are always a beautiful form, or they look like humans, but they're actually more beautiful, and they actually have a power coming out of them. And so the description of the difference between the angels and what people commonly call ETs is totally different.
Okay, so these angels give Enoch the plans for the pyramid.
Exactly.
I mean, how did they do that? In what form, do you think?
Well, I don't think they just kind of like said, hey, you know, build it like this and like this. I think that
blueprints. I don't think they did that.
No, I think they had to show him some mathematical things where over a period of time he came to understand, for example, the builders of the Great Pyramid knew the circumference of the earth. The builders of the Great Pyramid, at least in the architectural planning of it, knew the diameter of the earth. How do they know that?
There's no way.
Well, they most likely, when it came to the circumference of the earth, were able to track it through the use of an obelisk, which would cast a shadow. And so they knew that, and they used it. They used time clocks made of sand, most likely, and they were able to figure out the degrees of the earth on the basis of the obelisk and the sand. Most likely, he had to learn that over a period of time. So there's things that were taught to him where it could be broken down into simple terms where he learned some of these mathematical issues. But some of the stuff, for example, where, the location of where the pyramid was placed, I don't know if that could have been taught to him mathematically, because the Great Pyramid is placed right dead center in the center of all the world's landmass on a place where it only could have been built, which was a solid granite plateau that would hold the weight of that thing. So there were some things that he most likely was taught. There was other things he was probably shown. But for sure, the confluence of things that occurred there on the Giza Plateau made it so that it was the only place possible for where the Great Pyramid could have been built. Couldn't have been built any other place to fulfill all the things that it did. It was also, and still is, the world's most accurate compass. It's only off just minuscule degrees, and they think some of that is due to the land shifting. So there's so many things about it that are beyond the possible knowledge of primitive people of that day, that there's no way that humans could have been involved in the design of it. Even the equation pi is in it throughout, and the esoteric number of phi is in it. And there's so many things about it. The mean altitude of the earth was the height of it. And on and on and on of all of these things built into it. The base of the pyramid is actually curved at the ratio of which the circumference of the earth is.
That's incredible.
At its base.
Yeah, I did not know that.
Yeah, and so why was it curved at its base? Well, because they were trying to use the principle of the arch to maintain the weight in a control capacity, and that made it even more complicated for it to be built within a curve. Every base side is curved, and so it's the only pyramid that is built that way. All the other ones have not nearly the sophistication as the Great Pyramid. So it was built as it was purported to have been said in the book of Isaiah as a monument or a memorial unto the Lord. And people that were paganistic, like in the fourth dynasty, were not built, they couldn't have the capacity to build something unto the Lord. It had to be built by a righteous man that had a belief in God, a belief so great that he wasn't even required to die as other humans are, was taken off the earth in a ship.
Now, see, interesting, because Enoch was a descendant of Noah.
No. Noah came later. Noah was a descendant of Enoch.
Okay.
Enoch came, was the seventh generation from Adam in the line of Seth.
All right, I had that flipped around.
That's all right. You're forgiven.
All right, so let me rephrase it.
All right.
Noah's a descendant of Enoch.
That's right.
And he's given plans to do what he did.
That's right. And what's really interesting, I don't want to say this here, but the same unit of measurement that was given to Noah for the measurement of the ark, and the same unit of measurement that was given to King David when he got the plans later from Moses, is the same unit of measurement that the Great Pyramid was made in.
Now, as you well know, Ken, I don't believe in coincidence. So how did this all happen?
Well, I'm going to get ahead of myself, but I'm going to go there. When I went over to film the Great Pyramid, this might take a little bit longer. I don't know when the break's coming, but...
We've got 4 minutes or so you got
all right.
Some time.
I went over there twice. The first time, I knew I had to go over there to check out their security because I knew you weren't allowed to film or take pictures inside the Great Pyramid. So I went over there to scout it out on my own. And I went over there and I figured out how to defeat their security so I could get inside with a spy camera and film. And so when I went back the second time with my camera crew, we snuck in there, and I had a camera hidden in my hat, like it was an Indiana Jones hat. And we went inside there with flashlights, and we went up into the place called the antechamber. And inside the antechamber, because of my studies, there is something on the wall called a boss. And it looks kind of like a horseshoe, all right? It's about the size of a man's hand, but it's not – the inner part of the horseshoe is, like, filled in with stone. It's solid red granite.
Okay.
And I went in there specifically because I wanted to film that. I'd never seen any films of it, very few pictures of it. We got it on film. And what that is a key, and it's hidden in that antechamber in a way that only if you're looking for it would you find it. And I was looking for it. I knew right where it was. But the average person going through the pyramid would never see it. You have to, but it's a key, and the people behind the building of the Great Pyramid put it there because they wanted us to find out something about the Great Pyramid that would be hidden from the world, and only a few people, select people, would really know the meaning of it. And that boss, that relief that stands out there, is exactly raised 1 pyramid inch. Now, a pyramid inch is 1/500,000,000th of a part from the North Pole to the South Pole. 1/500,000,000th is a pyramid inch. And the Great Pyramid was built in pyramid inches. And exactly 25 pyramid inches from the wall is that boss. And 25 pyramid inches equals 1 sacred cubit. 1 sacred cubit. And the pyramid was built. Each base side was 365.2 sacred cubits.
Perfectly.
Perfectly, which equals the number of days in a year, and which equals the number of years that Enoch lived. He lived 365 years, and he was taken. The point of it is that the sacred cubit, nobody would know this unless it was revealed to you. And I'm going to reveal it right now, as conclusively, that this pyramid was built by angels. At least the plans were given to Enoch by angels. That the sacred measurement of a sacred cubit is the measurement of an angel. It says it in Revelation 21:18, 21:17, 21:18, right there. The measurement of a sacred cubit is the measurement of an angel. These are angel measurements. So the Great Pyramid was built by angels with the sacred with the Egyptian inch. 25 of them is a sacred cubit. It's the same measurement that the ark was built in, and it's the same measurement that the Holy Temple of the Jews was built in. It's the same measurement you see in the book of Ezekiel, and it's throughout the Bible. The sacred cubit is the measurement of angels.
So why build the pyramid?
Well, we're going to run into a time problem here.
Oh, we are. We only got a minute, so let's hold on that.
Hold on that one, because we'll be on that for...
All right, what about the possibilities, though, Ken, that the civilizations of the past were so advanced, way more than we even thought they were? Is that possible?
You know, when you go to Egypt, this is astounding, but you go wherever you go, whatever temple you go to, you can see on the obelisks, you can see on the archways, you can see on the walls, you can see hieroglyphics and wall paintings of Egyptian life and what the Egyptians were doing. These people had primitive boats. You see them carrying geese over their shoulders or riding at best on wagons with spears. These were primitive people. These were primitive people. They did not have the capacity or the mental acumen or the knowledge mathematically to build something like the Great Pyramid. There was a time before the Pharaonic dynasties began, which was about 3200 B.C., where it is talked about as the age of the gods. It's talked about in the Bible. It's talked about in Egyptian lore. And there was something that happened on the earth that was quite different than what we know today.
All right, when we come back, Ken, let's answer the old question. Why did they build a pyramid? And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie, our guest, Ken Klein. I do want to give you his toll-free number, by the way, those of you interested in the Pillar of Enoch, lost legend of the Great Pyramid. That's a toll-free number as well, 800-892-9007, 800-892-9007. Okay, Ken, why build the Great Pyramid?
Well, you know, there's been a lot of people that have studied the Great Pyramid. There's been a lot of theologians that have tried to equate a pyramid inch to a year and come up with some kind of a timeline that accurately predicts or portrays the dimension of human time, and they go through all kinds of great lengths to try to make the pyramid say that it is prophetically talking about human existence in terms of human history. And there's been a lot of books written on that. I've read a couple of them, and they're just really not accurate, and they're inconclusive, and they do a disservice to the true purpose for why the Great Pyramid was built. Basically, if I could sum it up in one word, and I want to elaborate on it, the Great Pyramid is actually a bridge. It's a bridge from our dimension, which is a subatomic existence, to a more transcendental understanding of God and the universe. And until we come to the place where we truly understand, and I think that's why this boss I was telling you about is so very important, that it was really constructed with supernatural knowledge that came from messengers or angel beings that were here that communicated with Enoch.
And why Enoch, Ken? Why pick him?
Well, you know, I don't know really the answer to that, except that he was a man that had a love and a fear of God, and he was a righteous man. He wasn't a corrupt man, and he was just a candidate to be, contacted by these messengers.
Just right place at the right time, I guess.
And the right guy.
And the right guy.
There's some people that are capable of receiving things that other people aren't, depending upon the kinds of decisions they make with themselves in terms of what's right and wrong, because we all have that capacity within us to do right or to do wrong. And he was a person that evidently made a lot of right decisions in the right directions, and he was overtaken by messengers that trusted him to do what was right, and he did. And he did the right thing, and he was taken. He never died. And so the key, I think, in understanding the meaning of the Great Pyramid is to understand, first of all, who were the architects of it, and they were angels. And so when we get into that understanding that this was supernaturally imparted to the world, then we can understand that they're trying to tell us something. There's something that this realm, these messengers, are trying to tell us. And if we try to understand it merely with human logic and with the understanding that the way people develop their mindsets and their terrestrial view of things, they'll never arrive at the true meaning of it. And we were never intended to just have an earthly view of existence. It was never God's intention for us to be that limited and that myopic, that we were supposed to have a grand concept of the whole universal structure. And yet, today, the human race is sadly so focused on the earth that we have no idea what the heavens are trying to tell us. So the Great Pyramid is a memorial and a monument left by gods or angels to try to arrest our attention to help us understand the bigger picture. And one of the things that we begin to understand is that there's a different language that they speak than what we speak. That we speak in a linear, time sequential framework. But the dimension of the heavens is a different language, and we need to understand what that language is if we're going to try to understand what we're being arrested to understand. And that language is a language of pictures and images and metaphors. It's not linear. It's not sequential. It's pictographic. And so there's this problem that we have on Earth because we're so limited by our understanding of the way, Earth life is, that we can't understand the language of heaven. And so why is that? Why are we in this condition? And that's one of the first things that the Great Pyramid tells us. And that is that when you walk into the front doors of the Great Pyramid, you go down at a 26-degree angle into what is called the bottomless pit. And in every society, in every culture, is the idea of hell or some place where you end up if you don't correct yourself. And every human being is born into this existence in a downtrending, what we call convolution. A spinning away from God, as it were. But if you reverse that and you were at the bottom of that pit, say, when you go all the way to the bottom, and it goes right through the granite rock 200 feet after you go through the bedrock, down into granite rock to nowhere, it leads to nowhere, and turned around and looked up. If you were standing at the bottom of that shaft in 2139 BC or somewhere about 3200 BC, it would point directly to this place called Alpha Draconis. And Alpha Draconis, we get the word draconian from. It's the word we get dragon from. And it's that place that we believe there was the Star Wars took place, or the Angel Wars, or the Messenger Wars.
Okay.
And that event caused a great calamity on this planet, and human beings have been affected by that war that is mentioned in Revelation 13, but has never really been fully exhumed from anteriority. And so, you know, I want to get into that tonight because it has a lot to do with what the messenger's mission is. And it has a lot to do with the Great Pyramid and many of the things in it that are messages trying to help us to wake up from our amnesia, our spiritual amnesia, to a true spiritual understanding of our existence. And so it was given as a bridge. It was given as a bridge by the angels to get our attention with many messages and many things to tell us about the spiritual world, which we are, you know, like I said, asleep to. We're awake to human consciousness, but we're asleep to spiritual understanding. And that's what I believe, you know, I'm on this show tonight to help people see. And that's why we do what we do, is because there's something coming. And I think this show tonight is going to be world-changing, because we're going to bring understanding that's never before been given to the world about the purpose of the messengers beyond just what I've just said.
Ken, you're familiar with the work of Zachariah Sitchin, I'm sure, right?
Vaguely.
Oh, really? Okay. Well, he believes, after interpreting Sumerian texts, that we were visited by extraterrestrials called the Anunnaki, from another planet that is in an orbit of 3,600 years around the sun and comes by here every 3,600 years, that they came down to search for gold. They needed it, I guess, to put gold particles in their atmosphere to continue to preserve it, but that they created workers, that they created us. In any of your work, do you come across the possibility that mankind might have been genetically altered or changed in order to be where we are now?
Well, you know, I don't want to speak against anybody, you know, or say anything negative about.
No, it's his theory, so that's all right.
But what I will say is that you have to kind of like refine material like you would, you know, pan for gold in a stream. And there's something valuable about what this man's saying. I don't believe he's accurate, but I think he's getting at something the same way George Lucas got at the whole movie Star Wars. He was tuning in to some truth that he, you know, turned into this great action-adventure sci-fi film that had a lot of things in it that were remarkably spiritually true. And that's what was so powerful about it. Now, this fellow that you're mentioning here, I haven't studied his work, but I think he's hitting on some things that are that have some degree of resonance with me, but I don't believe it's accurate. And what I'd like to do, George, is kind of take everybody on a trip with me to help people understand what really happened in our universe, because there's been more than one universe. This is the eighth universe we're in. The book of Revelation talks about a book of seven thunders in the 10th chapter of Revelation. And those thunders we know now, because we have been, I have to tell you that there have been people that have been teaching me that have been in contact with angels, with messengers, that have been helping us understand the reality and the truth of how the existence occurred. So this isn't something I've gotten from a book. This is something that's been revealed by messengers to us. And that's many of the things I'm saying are on my website now, and there'll be continually new additions to it probably every 2 weeks, so people can follow this and they can begin to be educated and truly know, so we don't have to guess and hit the ceiling here with ideas. We can really know. But what I want to do is kind of like reverse engineer the Great Pyramid for people by taking you on a trip, if you will, like in your imagination.
All right.
So that we can kind of get a grip on what really took place in this universe. Now, as I was saying, That little book of Seven Thunders refers to seven universes, because every universe begins in a star density compaction, and then there's a creative amptrictic energy released that explodes it, like the Big Bang. It's the Big Bang is right. The scientists have that right. But that Big Bang explodes out into a universal construction, and it goes, expands like it. The scriptures even say that God stretches forth the heavens, and that's exactly what happens. There's a stretching of this stardust, if you will, from a compaction that spreads out and creates a universe. And then there's a signal that goes out, and then it retracts. And that's why it says in the Bible he rolls it up like a scroll, because it goes back to a star compaction, only for him to build another one. So there's been seven constructions that have come and gone. We're in the eighth, but in our universe, there was a calamity. There was a catastrophe that happened amongst the messengers themselves that caused a great destruction. And we're still not recovered from that yet. Now, let me take you all on a trip.
Let's go.
All right. Try to imagine, everyone, that there's three starships. That we're on one of them, okay? And there's one to our left and one to our right. And we're flying through interstellar space, through dark space. Now, the angels can fly beyond the speed of light because they know how to fold space. So when you fold like a piece of paper, you cut the distance from one end to the other. So the angels actually fly beyond the speed of light, so they can travel vast distances.
And are they in a craft?
They're in a craft.
They are, okay.
They are in a craft. They're in chariots, so they're called chariots, the chariots of the cherubim, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You see it in 1 Chronicles 28:18. They fly the universal construction in craft. So let's just say all of us and all of the listeners are on one craft, and to the left is another craft with another group of people, and then one to our right with another group of people. And so we're flying, and we see off in the distance a light, and we head towards that light, and that light happens to be our galaxy called the Milky Way. And we're going there on a mission, and the mission there that we're going on is to create life. We are creators.
That's our job.
That's our job. We're creators. Now, the ship on the left, they're not creators. They're part of our team, but they have a different job. And the team to the right, they're on our team too, but they're different. They have a different responsibility, but they're also messengers.
All right.
And we fly into this galaxy, and we're looking for a place where we can create life, because the universes are made for subatomic life.
So we're looking for planets like Earth.
Yes. We're looking for a place where we can create subatomic life, because right now we're experiencing subatomic life, because we're seeing the physical world is a low acceleration of the energy of God, okay?
All right.
And his energy is so pure and perfect that if we were to stand in it, it would destroy us, because we just couldn't take it. So the extremities of the universe are like the wombs, like a womb where life is created, and the purpose of that life is to transcend and move towards back the dimension of the heaven of all heavens, which is God's domain, the domain of I am. Okay, so we're on this mission to start life, and our race, our team on that one ship is called the Ophans, okay? And plurally, it means, it should be explained as Ophanim. And the team to our left are called the Cherubim. And the team to the right are called the Seraphim. There's three of us. And we're flying into the Milky Way, not into the center, but into the extremities. Like if you see the planet Saturn, it kind of looks like the way our universe, or our galaxy, I should say, is shaped.
Now, do we know where we're headed, or are we scanning for planets like Earth?
We're actually scanning for a base camp.
Okay.
And the base camp that we select is a place called Arcturus. It's mentioned in the book of Job, and that's where we're setting up. Now, the cherubim, they're setting up in the belt of Orion, and the seraphim are at a different place, and it's escaping me right now. I can't remember that. It'll come to me in just a minute. But
they're
setting up in a different place.
Okay.
And each one of those groups has a different responsibility. The cherubim they're going to watch over the creation. The seraphim, they kind of like are keeping the records. And the Ophanim are the creators.
Okay.
They're the creators that operate under the mighty hand of Yah-Va-El, the Father.
So somewhere along the line, there is a divine creator.
There's Yah-Va-El is the Father. But he is the personification of I am that I am. Okay, he's the personification. And Yavael decides that they're going to leave that base camp with 144,000 messengers. And those messengers are going to go with him into this current solar system, this solar system that we're in.
All right.
And there they decide, and it is written in the book of Genesis where it is said, let us make man in our image. Let us. Who is us? Us is the angels.
Yep.
Let us make man in our image. So it's the Ophanim angels called Elohim, which is the generic name for angels. Elohim could relate to cherubim, seraphim, or Ophanim, but it's spoken generically. And so the Ophanim, the 144,000, have left the rest of the ship at Arcturus, and there, that office that was chaired by Yavael is now requested to be chaired by a cherubim angel. And that cherubim angel, his name is Lucifer.
Uh-huh.
And he requests to stand in the Morning Star office. And the Morning Star is mentioned in several places. One, Jesus Christ is called the Morning Star, and so is Lucifer called the Morning Star. And the reason that they're both called the Morning Star is because Lucifer was a glorious angel of great power, and he advanced in his accelerations to be given the honor of taking on the chairmanship of the Morning Star office. So he went over to Arcturus from the belt of Orion, and he chaired the office over the Ophanim that remained there. Now, the 144,000, along with Yahweh, went into the solar system, our solar system, and there they created life on this planet. And that includes humans. Humans, there were humans before Adam. There were humans.
All right.
They were more like animals. They weren't like we are.
Okay. I would
they
agree
weren't like
that.
We were. They're different. So what happened was that the signals that were going back, so Lucifer was a cherubim. Now try to understand that what it would be like if a Supreme Court justice moved over to the office of, say, a senator. Well, he wouldn't be able to function in the House of Representatives or in the Senate because he has a different mind circuitry set up than a senator or a House of Representatives.
Hold that thought right there, Ken. We'll come back and pick it up from there. That's fascinating. That's interesting. I'm back in a moment at Coast to Coast AM. Okay, Ken Klein, let's pick it up from where we left off. Travelers going to different systems throughout the universe.
Right, and the seraphim, well, I couldn't remember, was the Pleiades. They went into the Pleiades.
Ah,
so the
okay.
Ophanim were in Arcturus, the cherubim, belt of Orion, the seraphim into the Pleiades. Now, when Lucifer requested to take the seat that was vacated when Yavael and the 144,000 Ophanim went into this solar system to spirit this creation, his mind circuits did not sync with the Ophanim lords that were left behind at Arcturus. But he was able to convince them to follow him to Drago, which was the place that the descending passageway points to. And it was there in the relay of the design codes for creation that there was a confusion that took place. And that confusion resulted in the development of the dinosaurs on Earth, which were never intended. These were mind signals that were transmitted by Lucifer and the Ophanim that stayed at Arcturus to the 144,000 led by Yavael into the solar system. And when those creative signals and codes were scrambled and confused, it set off the war in heaven. That's why that took place. And so what happened is the 144,000 went and attacked the Ophanim that were under the now the dominion of the cherubim angel that was the covering angel over the Ophanim lords, and that's where the war in heaven took place between the angels. And when that took place, Yavael stepped in and declared there had to be a judgment because there isn't war allowed in the universal structures. It's not allowed amongst the messengers. And the judgment was that the Ophanim would have to take on the physicality of the humans that they created or not. And so many of the Ophanim that were following Lucifer refused to leave their angel bodies that could travel the universe and take on the degrading human life. And so they refused to do that. But there were many of the Ofanim that said they'd take their chances because they knew that Yahweh would redeem them, that he'd salvage them. And they trusted in the mercy of the Father, and they took on human bodies. And that's who every human on earth is. Every human on earth is your brother that has lost his way and had committed, sins in the heavens. And we've been cast into our own creations, human bodies.
Now,
we've lost our spiritual guidance system, and our identities have been taken from us as though, you know, we have amnesia. But we are actually, human beings are actually Ofanim lords. We are, and that's why Jesus even said, he said, "Have not I said ye are gods?" He knew who we were because we existed before we were born into the flesh. We were actually angels, and we're fallen. We're the fallen angels. And so the pyramid is a memorial, and it's a sign to us of where we came from. And that's why the most recent discovery by Robert Bouval, this is in the last 10 or 15 or 20 years, mm-hmm. discovered that the three pyramids on Giza actually are the mirror reflection of the stars in the belt of Orion.
And
they point
true.
To the stars.
Right.
And so why? Because that's where we came from. We came from the stars. We're the creators, but we've lost our bodies. We've been stripped of all of our wealth and power, and we're just these disgusting humans, you know, killing each other. Every person on this planet is our brothers and sisters that we were once linked with in this incredible purpose and plan, which is to populate the universe.
Let's go back, though, to that question that I asked you in April of this year.
All right.
That you couldn't answer.
Yes.
or didn't want to.
Well, at the time, I wasn't able to because we didn't have anything in, you know, documented. Now we have the documentation, and it's beginning to appear on my website. Everybody should go and start reading this stuff and start learning. See, the process now is, how do we get out of this prison we're in? How do we get out of these bodies where everybody's afraid of dying, you know, and trying to survive on this planet? We live on a little. We're less than a speck in the universe. We're in a prison here. We're chained up in emotions and mind circuitries that have us bound. And God's plan is to redeem us. That's why He came in the flesh as Jesus. Jesus, Yahshua, is Yah in the flesh, and to salvage this race, if we'll only open our eyes to see this salvage mission, we can actually transcend and enter in back into our glorified state as messengers and fulfill the mission to the universe. Because even Isaiah said, "Have not I called you that I might not plant the heavens?" That our destiny is the stars, and to travel and to get back into our creative mode. So our universe has been interrupted by our fall. And that's the catastrophe that's happened. And Earth is basically a prison, and we're chained up in these physical bodies, you know, that are all miserable and finite. It never was God's plan that we have to go through this, but this is what's happened. And so sin, what they call sin, and the word is not a very good word anymore. It's kind of a cliche. It actually happened, in outer space before it ever happened on Earth. It happened amongst the angels.
Okay, so. Why us? Why did they visit us from other worlds? Why did they jumpstart us?
Well, when you say why did they, what do you mean?
Well, the messengers.
We are the messengers. We're fallen messengers.
Well, we were descendants of them, right?
No, we are them. That's the point. Is that we are the creators. We are the Ofanim. We are the people in that ship I was telling you about that got into a fight amongst ourselves in the heavens because of the deception that happened from the Morningstar office, and we've been thrown into human bodies. That's the problem. We were born alive in human bodies, but have lost our spiritual moorings. We're born in an amnesia. We're born in a convolution. We're falling. We're born falling.
So you're saying all of us basically are the fallen angels.
That's right. Every human, whether you're a Muslim, a Jew, a Christian, a Buddhist, every person alive is a fallen angel, and trying to find our way back to spiritual reality through all of these things. So what's happened is that the cherubim have been working to try to rescue us by helping create things like the Great Pyramid, which is a monument, a memorial, a tribute unto God, because it speaks of higher intelligence that was handed down so that we begin to open our eyes to, you know, the heavens. And so we are the fallen angels. But now there so these cherubim, they fly in ships, but they don't look like these things called grays or these other weird looking things. Those are basically, you know, the photo transitions of the evil spirits that manifest in, like, they're like robots. They're actually like robots of the fallen angels that are sent to deceive us. So there's actually these ships that are they're called chariots in the Bible, but they're actually called ziths, which means fringes, and the good spirits or the good angels, the cherubim angels and the seraphim, they fly in the ziths. Now, the evil angels that refuse to take on human bodies, they fly in zams. They're called zams. And in fact, I wrote a screenplay about Zam Zuman, which is, deals with the Anakin, but that's another story. And anyway, they are able to create the deceptions, and they are evil. They're deceivers, and because their prince is a deceiver. So there's two kinds of ships. There's the Ziths and the Zams, and the Ziths, contain these beautiful, angels that are explained in the Bible that sometimes take on human form, but very short periods of time, because they begin to lose their angel consciousness if they're in the terrain too long, in this world too long. So they only come for short visits, if at all. So a lot of times they're photo transitions, and they'll look more like, you know, something that you could put your hand through. But sometimes they take on human form. But those of the Zams, like the grays that they talk of, they're real, but they're of another spirit. They're of the evil spirit. So, you know, there's a lot of deception going on. There's a lot of evil going on. But these things are very real, and it's people that don't have the big picture, you know, can easily be taken in by, you know, these ETs. I don't even like calling them ETs. I know what they are. They're not to me ETs. They're certainly beyond the terrestrial, so I guess you could call them ETs. But
right.
These UFOs, they're not unidentified any longer. They're identified.
They're Jacques Vallée would say, they're messengers of deception, perhaps.
Well, those of the Zams are, but the angels, the cherubim angels, you know. When you see them described, in the scripture, there's tremendous force coming out of them. You know, people can't fall to the ground. I mean, sometimes they didn't have a force. Sometimes they just looked like men, but they always had a beauty to them that is not, what we see on the internet or what is given to us on television of these weird looking creatures that have weird eyes and big heads and little bodies. Those are the evil ones. So, you know, we don't want to be deceived by them, but they are really real.
Now, let's go back to the pyramids for just a second, which ties into all this. In terms of the actual physical construction, how do you think they were made?
Well, you know, that's a mystery. I don't know. There is so many things about them. For example, we talk about some of these mysteries, you know, in my film. For example, in the King's Chamber, which is really not, you know, that's what's commonly called the upper chamber. There are 80-ton granite stones that are 22 feet long that were dug out of the up from Aswan, which is about 500 miles, maybe higher, maybe 800 miles up the Nile River from Cairo.
And there's no way they floated them.
No, because the river was not as deep as it is now, because there was no Aswan Dam there, and so there's no way they could have floated the draft in the boats that they had at the time. They would have sunk the ship.
Yeah,
so
we're not even
clear how they got them down or how they quarried them or even how they lifted. You know, these things weighed 80 tons, and they're up on the 50th course of stone. So how did they get them up there? Nobody really knows the answer.
And they didn't pull them. I don't think they pulled them.
No. Yet. So there's the possibility, you know, that at that time, I mean, I'm not saying this is the way it was, because I frankly don't know. I just know that it's so mysterious and amazing. I'm more interested in why they built it rather than how. But it's possible that, you know, there's stories in the Old Testament, for example, where Elijah was able to make an axe head float on water. I mean, it's in the Bible. You know, how did that happen? And Jesus actually walked on water. Somehow the knowledge of anti-gravity possibly could have been utilized to move some of these stones.
Yes.
I'm not sold on the idea. I've been to the Tura limestone quarry, and that's about 15 kilometers up from Cairo. They could have moved those over on ships, but in the time frame that Herodotus suggested, which was 30 years, it would have been impossible. They would have had to lay a stone every minute and a half just to fit in, and that's 24/7 for 20 years, just to put the interior stones in, not counting the casing stones that were on the outside. That would have taken a lot longer because they were 15 tons. So just when you look at the impossibilities of what it took and the logistical support, and then the mathematics and the surveying, the astronomy that went into it, I mean, there's just no way that humans, when you see them, with primitive spears with animals over their shoulders, there's no way they could have known to do that. It had to come from a supernatural knowledge, and that's the point that we're trying to make in our film, that when you see this, it really becomes a bridge to expand your understanding into the spiritual dimension, because once you see, what it couldn't have been done by, you go, this is way beyond humans.
Do you shake your head, Ken, when you hear things from Zahi Hawass, in charge of Egypt's antiquities, when he talks about Egyptians doing this, tugging it with pulleys and ropes? I mean, do you just... And then there's a port theory that's going around. Margaret Morris, of course, has a great theory about that. I don't know if it's true or not. How do you react to that?
Well, I tried to work through Dr. Hawass, to get my license to go over there. I tried to do it, kosher. That's not the right word. I tried to do it through... I tried to do it, legally, through, but they wouldn't let me come in there because my script is so contrary to Egyptian tradition and history that they don't want anything to do with me. That's why I had to go over there under the radar clandestinely and film it. Dr. Hawass, is following this long historical rendering of how it was done, and to go back and rethink this and deal with it would mean you'd have to write a lot of Egyptian history, and they're not going to be ready to do that. Plus, it kind of shakes them to the foundation, and the Great Pyramid and tourism to Egypt is a big deal. I mean, they wouldn't live without that. So I think they'd be rather frightened of my my film, and that's one of the reasons why I'm not sure the History Channel will ever pick it up. It'll probably have to go on Discovery, because History, they do these milquetoast renderings of Egypt just so they can keep making stuff for television, but it's all deception, and it doesn't really help us advance in our humanity and transcendence to be kept from the truth of what this really is. It really is a monument that was given to mankind to help us bridge our way into the spiritual dimension, and it's an unbelievable wonder. And that's why, I risk my life to go over there, because it's, you get thrown in jail, they'll take your camera, they'll confiscate your film, and it's a very dangerous thing to do. But the world needs to know the truth, and that's why we do what we do.
The story you just related about the travelers.
Yes.
Was this your theory, or is there some basis of fact back here?
There's plenty of documentation in the Bible, but a lot of the Bible has been interpreted in such a way that a lot of the words that were in the original manuscripts were translated in such a way that you can't really see it. And so on my website is this remarkable document. It's about 8 pages, which is the beginning of the context for which I'm speaking of, which is not only historically and biblically accurate from an Old Testament standpoint, but it's also affirmed by the manifest chronicles that are coming, that have come from messengers to people that have been contacted in British Columbia. And people are going to have to decide for themselves whether they believe it's true or not. I accept it. And I've been with these people, and the stories that they tell and the things that I've seen myself affirm their words, miracles, healings, amazing stories that one after the other, and then this document that's taken, this man received these messages in 1969. It's taken him all these years to write 7 books. The first is coming out, and we have an excerpt from it, like I said, on my website. 500 pages the first one's called Before Genesis, what took place in the Angel Wars and how all of these things came about. This is documented stuff, and that's why when I was on last time I hedged, because I didn't want to say anything until I could put something into people's hand where they could do their own study and contemplate these things, because this is going to change the world. George, this what I'm telling you tonight is going to change the world. It's going to change the theology of the Christian church. It's going to change the world. This, what we're talking about is the delivery of Holy Ghost power that can change, it can stop terrorism. That's how powerful it. This is the answer.
When does it start, though? When
it's
can we?
It's starting tonight on your show, when people just start coming to my website and start reading, and it'll start changing the way you think. It'll start transforming your mind, and that's the problem. See, we are Ophanim lords. We're kings that have been stripped of all of our power and beauty, and we're in these wretched conditions where we're in on a prison planet, wrapped up in chains of emotion and thought patterns that are very myopic and at low accelerations. And what I'm telling you is will speed up the accelerations of the mind and help us transcend out of these bodies and get back to where we belong, which is in our proper bodies. And because we've left those behind. They're just sockets in the heavens waiting for us to repossess them. But we have to transcend. And that's what the message of the pyramid is all about. It's about transcending ourselves. You know, the pyramids are reflections of the stars in the belt of Orion. So they represent stars. And stars in the Bible are metaphors of angels.
So basically what you're seeing again, though, is our spirit, our soul, the essence of who we are, that's been around forever.
Yeah, we've been around for a long time. We're just in a finite
Fascinating,
condition.
Ken. When we come back, we'll take some fast blast questions for Ken Klein, and then next hour we'll open up the phone lines. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. To the questions we go, Ken, Tom from Las Vegas wants to know where you get all your facts and info.
Well, I've been around for a long time. I have studied the scriptures for over 35 years. I have been exposed to people that have had direct contact with angels, that have been taught for the last 40 years, that have now written these amazing books that I've read two of them. I have excerpts on my website, which I'm hoping everybody will go and read. Look under the Manifest Chronicles on my website, and you'll see it all documented. That's why we didn't answer George's questions last April. We were waiting for the printing of these the first book called Before Genesis, and people can write me about that if they're interested in that. But you at least can begin to read about it at enochspillar.com, E-N-O-C-H-S, Pillar, enochspillar, P-I-L-L-A-R.com, or kenkleinproductions.net, and go there and read it. And you'll see, it'll bear witness with you. It'll resonate with you because it's the truth, and the truth sets you free, and it's changed my life, and I've had amazing experiences, spiritual experiences, as a result of opening myself to this, and it's all in the scriptures, but many of the scriptures have been tampered with and affected by over the course of history by translators, and a lot of the Bible is being restored and re-oiled by this amazing visitation, I want to call it a visitation, to help open our eyes, because the world's in a terrible state. We need help. And I believe that all of these things that are being written is that help that is being sent to us so that we can see a transformation in our world. So visit the site.
I'm going to paraphrase Dean from Rapid City, South Dakota, where his question is what happened for us to have these, we'll call them aliens for lack of a better word, some of them were good, some of them are evil. What happened? How did that happen?
Well, we went over that in the last half hour. There was a war in heaven, according to Revelation 13. We know it's documented in the most amazing book in the Bible that there was war in heaven. And there was a deception that took place because of the transmission from the cherubim angel ship, which is a mind circuitry of the cherubim angels, from their head archangel, which was Lucifer, and he moved over to the covering position of the Morning Star office and the Ophanim office, and it created great trouble because the synchronization of their mind circuits didn't work. and it led to a deception which caused an angel war. And that angel war, necessitated a judgment by Yah, Yahvael, who had to later come to the earth in the person of Jesus in the flesh to rescue the fallen Ophanim that were cast into their own creations, which was humans. And, we are them, and we need to be rescued from prison and from bondage, and that's what's at hand here. That's what the plan is for us to transcend our lower self into a higher self so that we can get back to the business of affecting the rest of the universe, which is our destiny. That's the destiny of the human race, is to transcend our humanness and enter back into our angelship, so that we can get on with the purposes of establishing life throughout this universe. And it says it in Isaiah, "Have not I called you, that I might plant the heavens?" And so we've been called to a heavenly calling to finish the work that we started to do, but there's been this interlude called time where we've had to endure a judgment and a suffering, and we need to move on now, and that's what this is all about.
Eric from Chico, California, wants to know if you believe in reincarnation.
No, I don't believe in reincarnation. I think that's a Hindu idea where you can come back as animals and all that. I don't believe in reincarnation. There is a case to be made for what is known as regeneration. John the Baptist was the regenerated Elijah. So there is some things in the scripture that point to a regeneration. In fact, Herod, when he sought to kill the firstborn of Israel, there's a message sent to Sarah, who cried about this thousands of years before the event took place. Sarah was weeping because her children were slaughtered by Herod. And the message is in Jeremiah that don't weep, Sarah. Your children will come back from the land of the enemy to their borders. What does that mean? That means that there's some case to be made for regeneration of people that have not had a time and a chance to fulfill their destiny. So, I don't believe in reincarnation, but there's some scriptural evidence that there is something called regeneration.
From Portland, Oregon, Mr. Sponberg would like you to comment about the Mark of the Beast.
I wrote a book on this. It's called, I wrote it a long time ago. It's now reprinted. It's on my website. I believe the Mark of the Beast will be a radio frequency identity chip that corresponds to barcodes that is now technologically arrived, and I think it'll probably be used to conquer identity theft, deal with the problem of terrorism, and it'll replace money as we know it. And I believe it's very soon. You can buy that book on my website too. I hate to be commercial here, but if somebody asked me, so I don't even remember the name of my book. America, Globalism, and the False Prophet.
It's been that long, Ken.
Yeah, America, Globalism, and the False Prophet, and it's a very powerful book. I know you kind of deal with stuff like that too, don't you, George?
Absolutely, Ken. Bill from Dayton, Ohio, please mention your two websites again. So go ahead.
Yeah, well, my 800 number, if I may, is 1-800-892-9007 if you want to talk to an operator in order. Or you can go to the website if you want to check out the Manifest Chronicles or even see a screening. There's a three-minute promo, or what do they call those, George?
Trailers.
Trailer, yeah. There's a three-minute trailer on my website of the Pillar of Enoch, and that's at Enoch's Pillar, ENOCHSPILLAR.com, Enoch'sPillar.com. You can also go to George's website and click on my name there. It'll take you right to my website, or else Ken Klein, K-L-E-I-N, KenKleinProductions.net. Either one of those URLs will take you to my website, but if you forget that, go to Coast to Coast and click on my name there. It'll take you right to the website.
The number that you mentioned, 144,000 of us who had come down.
Right.
Isn't that also the amount that will be taken? Isn't there a number in the Bible, 144,000?
Yeah, that 144,000 of those that follow Yahvael
will be taken back, I guess, huh?
Well, there's something called the rapture in that people talk about, and it's a great debate, you know, in Christian circles. But the arrival of the final take off from the earth, there is this thing called the rapture. And I believe it to be that the Enoch was taken to Arcturus. He was taken in a ship to Arcturus. And it says he will come with 10,000. So there is a race of people that have been spawned at Arcturus that will come in ships. It says in the Bible he will send his angels in ships, and they will gather the elect from the four corners. So there's, and I believe that the event will be most likely a meteorite destruction that comes to the earth, and there'll be those of us that are prepared to travel that will go in the ships. And I believe that will be most likely the end of the age. But I don't see it as a nuclear ending. That'll be in a regional areas. But the final destruction will be, this meteorite problem that we have, and the ships will come to take a portion of the human race, those that are prepared, those that have done the work of transcending. And that's why we're doing what we're doing. We're going to get this out all over the world, and people will taste it, they'll see that it's good, and they'll want to increase their mind circuitries, and that's what this will do. It'll expand your mind circuitries. It'll speed up your thought patterns and help you see spiritually, and that's what has to happen for humans. They have to get out of the bondages of hatred and murder and thievery and all of the evil things that happen amongst the human race, and we have to see that we're brothers one of another, and we have to love each other, and that's what God's all about. God is love. And he came in the person of Jesus, Yeshua, Yahweh came in the flesh to set up the rescue mission. And the pyramid points to that. He's the stone that the builders reject, and that's why there's no cornerstone on the top of the pyramid. It's a prophecy. And even, the descending passageway that goes down to the bottomless pit, if you took that passageway, which is at 26 degrees, and laid it at the north side of the pyramid, and on the ground, it points right to Bethlehem. So the pyramid even points to the birthplace of the Messiah. And by the way, I think this is really interesting, if I may, George.
Sure.
At this time of the year, people get their Christmas trees. And by the way, Merry Christmas to everybody, and have the greatest New Year of your lives. Everybody gets a Christmas tree. And what do they put at the top of the Christmas tree? They put a star.
One of those angels.
It's the Star of Bethlehem. And people go, the star, his star. Well, that star was a ship because stars don't move across the sky and stand over Bethlehem. This was a starship of the Lord. And it pointed down to where he was born in that manger. And that's how the shepherds found him. So when people put stars on their Christmas tree, they don't really realize that they're putting a prophecy up there that points to this starship. It's just exciting.
So you're saying that the Star of Bethlehem was a craft?
Yes, it was a planetome. It was a big, gigantic ship that actually beamed down a light right to the place where Christ was birthed in the manger. And we see it as the star, up in the heavens. But, there's no way a star in the heavens could come down inside the atmospheric earth and stand over, this manger. It was a ship.
Whatever happened to Lucifer? Where is he?
Lucifer is, I'm not quite sure if I could point to a physical location. He's in the heavens, evil in the heavens, and he's conducting the orchestration of the attack on the human race. Every time, and I believe, that attack is becoming more and more sophisticated, just like, when they started, being able to drop bombs out of airplanes in World War II, they throw them down with their hands. Now we can guide them with television, computers, and we have laser-guided technologies. Well, Lucifer's techniques of attacking humans is becoming more and more sophisticated, and I believe the way it works is that it works through our speech patterns, and our speech is intercepted, and it's almost like each person's speech patterns and words are then used as data to design sophisticated attack systems against each individual person. So we got to be careful how we talk. And the Bible talks all about be careful what kinds of words you say. Don't let any evil communication come out of your mouth, because those ships, those ZAMs that they fly in, can intercept the voice patterns and words of humans, and they can construct all kinds of tactics against you. So, you know, there's a spiritual warfare going on that we don't even realize how outgunned we are as human beings until we come under this canopy of protection and the training that we're offering through our website that's just beginning, so that people can, you know, walk in a protection system and then transcend out of their lower nature into their higher nature, which is the Christ nature.
Ryan from Denver, who are the Nephilim if we are the fallen angels?
The Nephilim were Ophanim lords that mated with the daughters of men, meaning that in the West Garden, there were humans that were not like us. In other words, when the Ophanim created the humans, where it said, let us make man in our image, there were streams of humanity that existed before Adam. And when the Ophanim lords came into being after Adam, created the, you know, this line where there was a connectivity to Am's domain, or the first domain, or the heaven of heavens, some of those Ophanim lords had sex with the daughters of men, which were non-aura-souled humans. And out of that came what we call the dance of the genes, and that spawned the Anakim, or the giants. I wrote a movie about this. We're trying to get produced for Hollywood, by the way. So the Nephilim were the Ophanim, and then their offspring did not have the connectivity to the first domain, and that's why there was violence on the earth. I mean, these gigantic humans, you know, rule the earth. And then, George, this is really interesting that this question should come up, because when the pyramid was made, it was made pre-diluvian, before the flood, and it was sealed with a kind of a mortar. And that mortar, today when they analyze it, they don't know how to remake it, but it's actually stronger than the limestone, and that sealed the pyramid from the flood. And the flood was sent to destroy those Anakim, those giant humans. It was God's plan to destroy the gene pool by destroying the giants that perverted the genetics of the human race by intermarrying with the daughters of men, who were the non-souled humans that were before Adam. So that's where that all came from, and that's a mystery that's been debated in the Christian world, but they don't understand it, but that's where it comes from.
Interesting one from Oscar in Pico Rivera, California. He said, you talked about the 144,000 which became us, but there's 6 billion of us on the planet. Where's the difference?
No, there's 144,000 that went out with Yavael, but they are the ones that went to battle with the other Ophanim. The sentence was the same on all of them. So all of them, you know, were banished and had to make the decision. So the 144,000 attacked the ones remaining behind. That was what the war was amongst the Ophanim, but the sentence on all of them was they would have to forfeit their angel bodies and come into flesh. So it wasn't just the 144,000, it was the Ophanim left back on Arcturus too, because they were in warfare. And then that's, you know, when Michael stepped in to help put down the war, and then Yahweh had to make the judgment. So the judgment was the same on all of them.
Interesting theory. Are you saying, though, that the 6.5 billion people on this planet, do they all have spirits and souls?
Oh, well, the thing of it is that we all have spirits, okay, and we have a connectivity to our soul. We have actually a human soul. But we also have a soul in the first domain with God. It's reserved in heaven for us. That's our actual, you know, immortality. That's our treasure, is our soul in heaven. So we have a signal of that soul within us. Every human does. Every one of us does. So we actually have, in a sense, we have a human soul, but we have a connectivity to our immortal soul, which is with God. It's reserved for us. But we all have a spirit. Every one of us has a spirit. So every human has a certain degree of connectivity to his eternalness, but as people descend down the passageway of this convolution that we're in, the signal becomes dimmer and dimmer. So you have people like, you know, serial killers that are, you know, they're so far away from their signal they can't even hear it any longer. They're at a point of terrible destruction, you know. And what happens is that when the final destruction, or what people call hell, is the compaction. So when the universe goes into reverse and it compacts back into a star density or a compaction, everything that is physical is burned, and their spirit goes back, you know, the energy of it goes back to God, but their soul print is gone. It's just, they lose that. That's the end of it. So it's as though they never were.
Nancy from Newport Beach wants to know, What about a war in space? Does that happen?
There was a war in space. There was a war amongst the messengers.
I guess she wants you to elaborate a little bit more on it, if you would.
Well, what happened was there was a deception when the cherub angel Lucifer moved over to the Ophanim archangel ship, and when he took command of that, his mind circuitries did not sync with the Ophanim circuitries. You know, when it talks in the Bible in Revelation 1, it talks about one or two, it talks about the seven spirits of God. Well, what that means is that there's multifaceted oneness amongst the angels. In other words, they all have the same mind sequence, but they're different mind sequences amongst the different groups. That's when I did the little illustration of the three ships. I differentiated
right
between the Ophanim, the Cherubim, and the Seraphim, because even though we're on the same team, it's like, you know, one guy's a quarterback, another guy's an end. You know, they think differently, but they're on the same team, so to speak. You know, a weak metaphor, but I have to reach back to my football background to make my point. But when the Cherubim angel moved over, it's kind of like, you know, what you would expect a Supreme Court justice to do when he moved into the, you know, the Congress. He couldn't function there. He's a legal-minded man. These people are, you know, have a different function. So there was not the synchronization and alignment of the mind circuitries, and this caused problems that ended up in a deception. And that's when Lucifer took the Ophanim off to Drago, because they were originally there at Arcturus. And when that deception took place, it affected up the relay of signals with the 144,000 and went to spirit creation in this solar system.
All right, Ken, stay with us. We're going to take phone calls next on Coast to Coast AM. Ken, before we go to calls, give me your concept of inversion, if you would.
Okay. Well, if you, let's take a glass of water. You fill the water up to the top of the glass, and then you turn the glass upside down, mm-hmm. and the water flows out. What the angels and what God's trying to do through the angels and through the whole reality of the rescue mission of Yeshua is to turn the glass around again so that we can receive the Holy Spirit and be filled up in such a way that there's a formation of the Christine in us. So inversion means that we've been turned upside down. And in the upside downness, the very energy of God has been drained out of us, the divine energy. We have certain amount of amptrictic energy, which means life. You know, the power of God exists in us in very low accelerations. And what God's trying to do is turn us right side up, so that we can receive the energies that come from the Bible calls it the waters above the heavens. And when you read Genesis, it says God separated the waters below from the waters mm-hmm. above. And most people don't have a clue what that means, but what it's saying is that there's a separation between earthly energies and heavenly energies. And what we can't do in this upside-down state is receive the energies from the waters above. So when we get turned around, when we get turned right side up and we become, you know, vessels that can receive, well, then we're on the pathway to being transcendent. And it begins with Christ, Jesus Christ, whose birthday we're going to celebrate here on Christmas in just about 2 weeks. And then it's a matter of receiving magnitudes of the Spirit, of the God's Spirit, so that the waters from above flow into our vessel. And then everything in life becomes direction towards that purpose of transcendence. And so our life takes on a different dimension, and we enter into a new journey where we begin to understand that we're called to this heavenly calling. It's not about, you know, going to China and winning all these people for Christ or something like that. It's not about it. It's about preparation. It's about preparing to take back what was taken from us, what we lost when we fell out of our angel bodies, to enter back into our angel person so that we can get on with our purposes in this universe. So we have to go through this process called inversion. And it begins initially, you know. And when you look at the Great Pyramid, by the way, you know, there is a pathway. There's nothing in any of the other pyramids that even comes close to the Great Pyramid in terms of its inner structure. And it's like a template that even can be looked at to measure where we're at in our spiritual journey. But there is in the Great Pyramid a passageway that intercepts the downtrending passageway, but it's blocked with granite. And that's kind of like our spiritual state. We're like blocked from transcending until we come to the realization that we're in a fallen state and we're really going nowhere. We're actually going down to a place that goes to nowhere, which is that bottomless pit. But as we come to the Lord, you know, we can start that upward journey, and then we move upward towards the greater revelations. And that's what the Grand Gallery is all about. It was really designed, you know, as a metaphor, but was used as a kind of like an observatory of the stars. And like I said, stars are, you know, metaphors of angels. And so, you know, as we move forward into this grand gallery of our experience spiritually, we begin to receive more and more revelation of God, which helps us transcend to the higher states of, you know, our true self. And that's what everybody's really looking for. That's what the whole world is searching for. And that's why the pyramid is a monument to the Lord, because it has all of these things in it that direct us towards the stars and our destiny. We came from the stars. We're supposed to go back to the stars. And in the New Testament, it says nobody can ascend unless he first descends, even Christ. So even Christ descended, and even we descended from our angel bodies. We must transcend. We must ascend. And that's what this is all about.
Okay, let's go to the phones. West of the Rockies, you're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, George and Ken.
Hi.
This is very enlightening. Yahweh bless you.
Thank you.
Through his son, Yahshua HaMashiach, and we're in covenant with him.
Good.
Yes, and so what you're saying definitely resonates. Two questions.
What was your name?
Ann.
Hi, Ann.
Hi, Ken. How will we be creating is the first question. And how does Jerusalem, the earthly Jerusalem, I know the heavenly is in the new Jerusalem, was the mother of us all, that's Galatians 4:26, but how does Jerusalem in the Middle East figure?
Well, God has made covenants with Israel. Abrahamic covenant has been given to Israel. God hasn't forgotten that. And Israel, earthly Israel, earthly Jerusalem, is a metaphor of the heavenly. And so God will keep his covenants with Jerusalem and with Israel because it's promised to Abraham. We are in the time of Abraham's bosom. That's the time frame we're in this whole expanse of our existence. And so it is something that should be kept intact. It is something that is, you know, speaks of the heavenly. The heavenly Jerusalem is us. It is explained in the scripture as, you know, a city. You know, admittedly, but the city is a physical construction that is a metaphor of the unity of the brothers and sisters in Christ. We are the city of God.
Hallelujah.
We are the city of God. And what we have to do is we have to embrace all people everywhere as our brothers and sisters, because they truly are. We are from one race. We are from one actually spiritual gnome. And yet we're in these diversified human identities that are at war with each other. So almost as though the war that we once had in the spiritual dimension as angels now has been, you know, dropped on us here on earth. And here we are fighting each other all over the planet. But the reality is that we all have to be healed of mental diseases, and we need the doctor to heal us. And these words that we're speaking tonight, and these I don't want to say ideas, but these principles, I don't even like calling them principles, but these manifested truths, let's call them that, are the manna. It's the manna. It's the angel food. As we ingest it, will cause us to transcend and be healed in our minds. And it'll even affect our bodies. And did you know that God started speaking about who we were back in the Egyptian times when the Jews were, you know, fleeing from Pharaoh, when he fed the Jews with manna? That was specially designed food by the angels given to the Hebrews, and it was so powerful that it even maintained their clothing for 40 years. It seeped through their pores and affected their clothing. That's how powerful the knowledge of God is. It'll heal us and protect us and keep us.
Oh, and it's Rachel, weeping for her children. Jeremiah 31:15.
Yeah, Jeremiah 31:15.
I like what you said is she saw the future.
Yeah, and she also saw her children coming back through the Romans.
Wonderful.
Isn't that amazing?
Yes.
We never
Thank
go
you.
Back there and read that, Jeremiah 31, but it speaks of this regeneration. Because, see, everybody must have a fair time and a chance to fulfill their destiny. Every person has a destiny. And that is the pearl of great price that's spoken of in the parables. The pearl of great price, a lot of people say, well, that's about Jesus or that's about the church. No, the pearl of great price is about your destiny, that you sell out for your destiny. And your destiny is the stars. That's our destiny.
Yeah, Yahweh answers her, refrain thy voice from weeping and thine eyes from tears, for thy work shall be rewarded.
Yeah, read the rest of it for your children. Go ahead.
All right.
For your children will
Yahweh,
come forth.
And they shall come again from the land of the enemy.
They will come forth from the land of the enemy. So it's talking about your children aren't dead. They're going to come up in different human bodies, and they're going to come back to their borders. I mean, if that isn't a message of hope to Rachel that, you know, these people that were murdered by Herod would actually come back, but they'd be Romans, and they'd come back to their own land. That's an incredible scripture.
Okay, thanks for your call. Let's go to some other callers. Let's go. First-time caller line, welcome to Coast to Coast. You are on the air with us. Hi there.
Hello, this is Melita from Arkansas.
Hello, Melita.
I am very grateful for the information you're bringing forward, Ken Klein, and thank you, George Norrie, for taking the call, and have Merry Christmas to everybody.
So Merry Christmas to you.
I'm feeling that I am living your truth as I have been striving to overcome the lower senses of the anger, the greed, the rage even against God and against the way things are and how to get that inner peace. And through my research and my prayer, I came across a book that I believe has revealed some truth to me that rings true to me that also seems to collaborate what you're saying tonight. And the name of the book is The Talmud of Emmanuel. It's printed by Bridger House Publishers, and it's based on an ancient document. Actually, the actual translation discovered, let me try that again. The ancient document was discovered in 1963, encased in resin and buried for nearly 19 centuries. And was original Aramaic writings found in the tomb of Emmanuel, the burial cave. And the first party that found it was murdered. Most of it was destroyed. And there was only a very small amount of it that was left to be translated into German and then into English. And on page 12, it says, Joseph was the husband of Mary, the mother of Emmanuel, who became pregnant by a distant descendant of the celestial son, Raziel, who was the guardian of the angel of the secret. When Joseph heard of Mary's secret impregnation by a descendant of the celestial sons from the lineage of Raziel, behold, he was filled with wrath and thought of leaving her, blah, blah, blah. And, well, the celestial son who impregnant Mary was Gabriel. And then it does also later say God deserves the honor of people of earth, for behold, he is the true originator of the white and of the colored human races of earth, and to him should be all honor given. So I believe this collaborates what you're saying, and that answers the question of whether this was a Mary's mystical experience or was it actually an impregnation of a being, and this was a live being, a celestial son.
No, I'm sorry, that doesn't corroborate where I'm coming from at all, so I have to interrupt you there because I don't believe that and I don't think that's accurate. It's not even biblically accurate, not even close, and so I wouldn't regard that as something that corroborates what I'm saying, because I'm sorry, I just have to interrupt there and tell you that that's not the way it occurred. It's not the way it's been revealed, and I think it's an error. It's an errancy.
All right, next up, let's go to our wild card line. You're on Coast to Coast. It's your turn. Hi there.
Hi, I'm Tia, and I'm calling from Orange County.
Hi, Tia.
Hi. I'm just wondering, I went on the website and I saw that, Ken, you are a Hebrew Christian. I think that's what how they said it. And I just was wondering, like, how the Christian church looks and how they accept what you're saying and how you breach that that gap, because it would seem like it would be interesting.
Well, I think that's a kind statement. I think there's a lot of errors in Christianity that that the church is not ready to face. I'm not certain that this will be widely accepted in Christendom, although it is totally biblical. It's because there's been very many alterations in the Bible. For example, just take this one thing in the King James Bible, which is the authorized version, which is most widely accepted amongst Christians. There's a scripture that I think it's in 1 John 5, for example, and it says, "There are three that bear witness in heaven, the Father, the Word, and the Holy Spirit." And if you go back to the original Greek language, it's not even in the Bible, and yet it is what people accept as a reference to the Trinity. And yet it is not even a biblical verse. It was inserted by the people that transcribed the Bible under King James, and it's not even accurate. So there's been many alterations in the Bible, and there's been many books that were not included in the Bible that were lost, and there's many problems with the Bible. That doesn't mean that it's not contained the Word of God. It's just that there's been a lot of things that have been changed over the course of time that have watered it down and diluted it. And so there's a lot of people that would say that I'm a heretic because I'm saying that that scripture doesn't belong there, but it doesn't belong there. It's not in the Greek language. So I don't know to what degree, you know, Christendom will embrace this or not, but I can tell you something. There's people leaving the churches all over the world because something seems to be missing. Their answers aren't being addressed because the church is incapable. For example, just take the whole idea of cloning. You know, the church has no idea what to do with say about it. They just say that it's evil, and they have nowhere to go with any biblical text. But there are texts in the Bible that deal with it. There are plenty of things, but they can't see it. So this is a time where people are going to have to really evaluate what they believe and look at this. And that's why when George asked me to comment on what many of the things I've talked about tonight, I refused to last April because we didn't have anything in print. We didn't want to be called a cult. We wanted to have documentation and references to what we're writing so people could do their own research and study and make up their own minds about this stuff rather than just go by their dogma and their doctrine that's been fed to them for, you know, what, 1,800 years, 1,900 years. I mean, the Council of Nicaea came up with a whole concept of the Trinity, for example, and that's pretty much what everybody believes. But is it the way it is really expressed in the Scriptures or not? And let's take a look at all these things. I don't think God is insulted or offended if we, you know, ask a lot of questions. And so this is going to cause a lot of people to question what they really believe, and I think that's a good thing.
Are we in the final stages of the final conflict?
No. No, we're not. You know, the Bible says that God made a promise to Abraham unto 1,000 generations. He said, "You will be a father unto 1,000 generations." Well, a generation, if you're just generous with the word generation, it could be up to 70 years. At least it's 40. So if he's going to be a father unto 40 generations, that's 40,000 years. So I think that the Christian world's been talking about these last days ever since Jesus was here. And that isn't to say that there aren't troubles on the earth and they don't point to the necessity for some kind of intervention. But to say that we're in the final battle, I don't believe we're close to it.
All right, stay with us. Final calls next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie with our guest Ken Klein. We'll take your phone calls as well. Ken, fascinating research, I have to tell you. Do you stand alone out there with these theories, or are there others?
These aren't my theories. There are people that have had remarkable, remarkable experiences with messenger angels that have taken the veil off of many of the things that have been hidden in the scriptures that people have not been able to penetrate. And all that we've written, all that I'm talking to you about is not my own. I have not, this isn't something that I figured out. This has been revealed to me by wonderful, loving, kind, anointed people that have taken over, well, since 1969, have been transcribing these works that have been given to them by messengers. They are totally biblical, but they have oiled and dusted off many of the scriptures that had been lost from antiquities and restored to the human race. And so the first excerpts that I have of Before Genesis, which deals with the angel wars and many of the things I've talked to you tonight, are on my website under the Manifest Chronicles. The author of it does not want to be known except by the name The Manifester.
The
Manifester. And so people can go to my website, and it doesn't cost anything. I mean, I'd like you to get my Pillar of Enoch film because it helps keep me going. But we're going to publish this for free from probably weekly or bi-monthly, where there will be new excerpts from the Before Genesis book. And there's six other ones. The one coming after what this is called Star Rise. And it's about the star of Christ rising in your own being. And that's coming next. But they can get an excerpt on this if they go to enochspillar.com, enochspillar.com, and go to my head page. And on the left side, under brand names, it's the Manifest Chronicles. It's not prominently displayed. You have to look for it. And just click on it, and it'll take you to this excerpt, and you can start reading it. And it's all fully documented and footnoted, and it's unbelievable. So that's where they should go. And if they do want to buy my number, would it be appropriate, George, to give my 800 number out?
Yes, please. Go ahead.
If you want to get the Pillar of Enoch, which is this bridge full of prophecies and unbelievable things, 1-800-892-9007, 892-9007, or you can get it on my website at enochspillar.com, enochspillar.com. There's a trailer. You can look at it. Or if you lose all that, you can go to George's site, Coast to Coast, and click on my name, and it'll take you right to my site.
All right, very good. And by the way, that meteorite asteroid that you talked about last hour, I mean, do you believe that's something that could be out there that's heading this way? We just haven't seen it yet?
Yeah, I think that the Earth will be struck, and that'll probably be the end before we see a whole nother compaction. Because it says there'll be a new heavens and a new Earth, which means there's going to be another compaction, and there'll be a ninth universe. So how that all plays out over the course of time, I'm not certain, but I believe that we will be struck by a meteor. It won't be nuclear war that takes out the world. It'll be a space debris. And that's when the angels will come and take us out of here. So please, everybody, get ready, because we're, you know, I don't know how long it's going to be, but I don't think it's as short as Christians believe. I think we'll be here for a while longer. There's a lot more things that have to happen, and there's a lot more that needs to take place in the hearts of the multitude. So.
All right, let's go to final calls. West of the Rockies, you're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi. This is just an incredible program, and I thank you very much.
You're welcome.
I do study Hebrew, and I try to do the Bible codes, actually, and I wanted to know if you believe that the Bible codes, as many of my friends who decode as well, believe that it's the little scroll. And I wanted to ask you what you thought about it, and I'll listen off air.
I didn't understand. The little scroll in Revelation 10?
Yes, and referred to in Daniel.
No. The little scroll in Revelation 10 was the angel giving to John this book of the seven thunders, okay? It has nothing to do with the Bible codes. Those seven thunders were a mystery to John, but they've been revealed now. And people say, well, you're adding to the book of Revelations, all the curses be upon you. Well, God bless you, you know. God doesn't want anybody to be cursed, and we're not adding anything. Those seven thunders relate to the incidents of the universe existing as a chaotic mass in a star density compaction. And then there was the energy that was supplied to that compaction that caused all that matter to explode into this universal construction. And that's called the alpha mode. And so the universe expands in this alpha mode until a signal goes out from the mighty throne of God and calls it to reverse. And then it goes into reverse, which is the omega mode, and it goes back to a compaction. So when we look at the book of Genesis and it says, in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth, the proper rendering in the Hebrew, since you're a Hebrew person, should be from aforetime manifold God, which is Elohim, had created the heavens and its matter. That's the way it should read in the Hebrew. From aforetime manifold God had created the heavens and its matter. So Genesis is basically a snapshot of that cycle. It's a snapshot of the Alpha Omega cycle. So the seven thunders has nothing to do with the Bible code. It has everything to do with the fact that we've had seven universal constructions. We're in the eighth, and it'll go into a compaction, and that's why it says there'll be the heavens will melt with fervent heat, because it goes back into that compaction, and then there'll come a ninth universe. God creates universes where he plants all kinds of life. We're not it. We're not the only life form in the whole universe. That's ludicrous for anybody to believe that we as human beings are it, when there's this gigantic universe with over 900 billion known galaxies the size of ours. To think that we're it, that is just got to be the height of stupidity. And yet, that's what many people believe, but it's wrong.
All right, next up, Wildcard Line, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there. Hello.
Hello.
Yeah,
this
go ahead.
Dan. Yeah, you were talking about the generations and stuff, that Abraham said there was going to be, you know, 1,000 generations he was going to produce, and you said it was going to be like 40,000 years. You're way off there, because you don't go by how long a person lives. You go by when they create, you know, a new generation in their family, and they were marrying off, you know, and marrying at about, you know, 14, 15 years old back in those days. So you're only looking about 6,000 years.
6,000.
Well, first of all, God said you'll be a father unto 1,000 generations. And I'm not, you know, people have dickered about generations forever. A generation doesn't have to be 16 or 17 years. God said that he would cause the Jews to dwell, to travel around for 40 years in the wilderness until that generation died out. A generation could also be 70 years, because he carried the Jews off for 70 years to Babylon until all those people died out. So your assessment of the 14 years is it's not biblical. You might say, well, there's a historical truth to it, but the biblical underscoring of a generation, I would think, should be pegged to the 40 years of wandering of the Jews in the wilderness when all the people died except Joshua and Caleb. And that to me is a generation. But even if it's 16 years, that's more than 6,000. 16 years is at least 16,000 years, which, you know, stretches way beyond what modernists think the time of human existence has been since the time of Adam, which is 6,000 years. So I think even if we took your conservative estimate of 16 years, that pushes it out at least another 10,000 years. So I don't think your facts are right.
Okay, next up, let's go first-time caller line. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Hello, sir.
Yeah, go ahead, please.
My question is, what are your feelings on the sorrow? Is that true or not?
What are my feelings on what?
The sorrow.
The what?
The sorrow.
Sorrow? I don't even know what it is.
National Economic, I believe it's Recovery Act. You no clue what the sorrow is?
You know, I used to be really concerned with world politics, and I've written books on it, you know, that deal with the expanse of human history and political structures and empires. I'm not concerned with that anymore. There's a knowledge under the sun, and it's spoken of by Solomon. There's nothing new under the sun, that things come and things go, and there's nothing new, and everything that was will be and shall be. I'm not even concerned with that anymore. I'm concerned with knowledge above the sun, or from the heavens. So I'm not concerned with, and I don't mean to be rude, I'm not trying to be rude, it's just that I don't know anything about it, and it probably wouldn't spend much time looking into it, since I'm dealing with more sublime things. Sorry about that.
Okay, well, we're running out of time. We'll take one or two more calls here for you, Ken.
Okay.
You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hello.
Yeah, welcome to the show. Where are you calling from?
Kentucky.
All right, go ahead, please.
Okay, hello, George.
Hi.
On the physical, everyday realm, you know, we are the embodiment of Christ, you know, because he's not on the earth anymore. And so, in your opinion, do you think that the people that are the in the angel realm, the people that whose root is the love of money, do you think that the demonic powers feel them the most? I also have a comment.
Well, you know, everybody's in a different place of development. You know, there's some people that are really corrupt, you know, and they just think that the life itself is about lifestyle, which they want to acquire by, you know, acquiring enormous amounts of money. And I've written, my book deals with that in America, Globalism, and the False Prophet. And so, you know, I don't believe any human can judge another human, because the degrees of difficulty of that are so enormous that it's impossible to make judgments over anybody.
Okay.
And so it's not my position to judge, you know, the Rothschilds or the you know, even the Jewish cabal of international banking or any of that stuff. Everybody's in a different place, and everybody's you know, God is trying to get our attention so he can get us to go in a different direction. So discussing, you know, the root of all evil, of course, it's the love of money. And, of course, that's a hook that the enemy gets. But to judge a human being, I cannot do that. I'm not called to do that. And I don't really believe anybody is capable of doing that. You can do it. But it's the seraphim angels that have that responsibility, you know, and that's what they do. They're the scribes and the ones that keep all the records, you know, and they'll open those books when we die to judge, you know, our life. And hopefully, you know, those of us that are listening that partake of this heavenly food will transcend and get out of our human lattice problems and enter into our divine, you know, self.
Where do you think the angels came from? Another dimension? One of the other universes?
Well, the Ophanim angels actually came from the first universe, and that's in this book before Genesis. And it's a long story, George. I mean, I'll have to come back, and that's a big, long story. And I probably should get the manifestor on with you to deal with some of these deep questions.
And by the way, why doesn't he want his name revealed?
He's really a humble person, and he might come on, and if I can arrange it, I will. I'd have to ask him, but he could deal with that with a great deal more of articulation. But the Ophanim angels came from the Alphans, the first beings that were, you know, created in the outer alpha dimensions, which is the universal constructions, because there was an inner alpha time period, if I can call it time. But see, these things are in this before Genesis, which is, you know, people can write me and get in line, and as soon as we get them, we'll contact you. Just write me an email. But the Manifest Chronicles will begin to get at some of these things that you're asking me about, but perhaps I can, you know, talk to this man and see if he'd be willing to come on your program.
East of the Rockies, you're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, good morning.
Yeah.
Hi, Ken. Thank you for your show this morning.
Oh, thank you.
I just wanted to comment on the caller two or three calls back when she started to talk about what was revealed to her, and you stopped her and said that was not biblical. As you said earlier, everyone is in a different place, and we can't judge anyone. What was revealed to her by the Holy Spirit, and she's in the right place exactly at the right time. I just wanted to make that comment, and thank you.
Well, all right. There you go. Next.
Well, you know, let
go
me
ahead.
Comment.
You want to react to that? Sure.
Yeah, well, the Gabriel, the angel, did not spawn the Holy Child. You know, that's not the way it happened. And to come up with something like that, I just cannot. I mean, she's not in the right place at the right time. She's in error, and she's reading something that'll take her into a dimension that, you know, is not healthy for her. So I'm not speaking that in terms of judging her. I'm judging what she's saying, and what she's saying is just not right. So I don't have any axe to grind with her. I'm just hopeful that she'll pay attention and she won't go that route.
First time caller line, you're up with us on Coast to Coast.
Hey, this is a buddy from Louisiana.
Hey, buddy.
Ken, man, I agree with some, but if dinosaurs were a mistake, why have humans retained like the RCAP from in our brain, from like the reptile brain that's you know, under the cerebral cortex? If it was a mistake, you would think it's kind of counterintuitive to think that we still have those things that were part of a mistake, you know?
Well, I don't know what you're talking about with the reptile brain. That's like news to me. I mean,
well, we all have part in our brain, Ken. We all have that little reptilian part of the brain still, since the beginning of time.
Well, there is in the human body lattice a animal soul. Okay, so suke So, okay, I could go there with you, but, you know, we were thrown into these body lattices, and we're way beyond, you know, the humans that pre-existed Adam, because they were not written in the book of life. We were before the foundations of the world. We were known by God because he was our dearest kinsman, and that's why it says that to whom he did foreknow, he also did predestinate. So God knew us before we were humans, but in human bodies there is the ancientness of the animal nature. I mean, we all have an animal nature. That's what we're trying to overcome. So I'm not quite sure what this question's about, except maybe you didn't understand all that I'm talking about. But we have to overcome our human selves. And there is an animal component to that aspect of us. You know, there's no doubt about it. But there is the divine, and it's called the silver cord, you know, that's mentioned in the book of Ecclesiastes. That's connected with the first domain. And everybody is born with the light of God. It's just that he is the light that lighteth every man that cometh into the world. But it's that light that gets dimmed by cleaving to the animal nature and following those human tendencies. And that's what dims the light. So I'm not arguing with him at all. I just, you know, I haven't heard of the reptilian thing, and that's just a new thing to me. But there is an animal nature that we all have that we're to overcome. That's what the overcoming is all about. That's what we're all called to. And just because you believe in Christ doesn't mean you're overcoming. I mean, that's just the beginning.
Get the websites out real quickly, Ken.
Okay, the 800 number for the Pillar of Enoch, you got to get this. This is the bridge, 1-800-892-9007, 892-9007. The website, you can get it on Coast to Coast if you click on my name there, or Enoch's Pillar, ENOCHSPILLAR.com, ENOCHSPILLAR.com. There's a trailer. You can preview it.
Very good. Thank you, Ken. Appreciate you being on Coast to Coast.
Thanks a lot for having me, George. Merry Christmas to everybody and the happiest of New Year's.
For Steve Carr, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Ross Mitchell, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM, we'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.